Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for a Thursday, May 12th, 2022. Burn ban in effect, no ground fires, by order of Presidio County. Fatal car crash on U.S. 67 south of Marfa leaves one dead, two injured. By Allegra Hobbs and Sam Karras, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. A Chihuahua man died in a car crash on U.S. Highway 67 while traveling south between Marfa and Presidio when a north-traveling car veered into the southbound lane, hitting the man's car head-on and causing it to flip. The two occupants of the other vehicle sustained serious injuries but survived while their car erupted in flames. Mario Rodriguez, 62, was killed in the collision that took place approximately 18 miles south of Marfa on Sunday evening, around 7:28 p.m., according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. A preliminary report from the department indicates that Rodriguez had been driving south towards Presidio at milepost 952, where the speed limit is 70 miles per hour, when a northbound Dodge 3500 pickup truck veered into his lane, hitting him head-on. A DPS spokesperson said the collision was still under investigation, and the department could not say why the northbound driver had veered into the southbound lane. Rodriguez's son, Daniel Rodriguez Contreras, told the Big Bend Sentinel that he and his brother had been driving ahead of their father along the corridor towards Presidio, which was a normal route for them to travel as a family. The Estacion Consuelo residents would often drive along the highway to visit family in the United States, he said. On Sunday, the brothers were driving ahead of their father's Ford Aerostar passenger van when their father could no longer be seen trailing behind them. "He was following us," recalled Contreras in Spanish. "My brother no longer saw him and looked back, and that was when he saw the accident." That Sunday was Mother's Day, and Rodriguez had traveled into the United States to retrieve gifts and visit family, said Contreras. His car had been loaded up with gifts to bring back to Mexico for a Mother's Day celebration. He was going to throw a party for all his children, his mother, and his relatives who are mothers, and be brought in his truck. And he brought in his truck many gifts that he had bought at Walmart and other stores for all the moms, said Contreras. All of that stayed in the truck. Contreras said his father had been a devoted husband, parent, and grandparent. "My father was a humble, simple, hardworking man who never got into trouble with anyone," he said. "He always worked to give the best to his three children and his wife and his grandchildren." The surviving driver and passenger of the other car involved were transported to Big Bend Regional Medical Center, said Marfa Fire Chief Gary Mitchkey, who had been at the scene. That car's passenger was subsequently airlifted to El Paso for surgery, according to a GoFundMe raising money for his medical expenses. The organizer of the GoFundMe did not return a request for comment by press time, and the driver of the car could not be reached by press time. Mitchkey said he spoke to one of the car occupants upon arrival, who was on the ground and indicated he felt pain in his abdomen. The other occupant was farther away and receiving treatment from EMS, who were arriving on the scene. They were far enough away from the burning vehicle where I felt they were safe, said Michki. The car fire on the highway spread to grass on the roadside, said Michki, creating a brush fire. We actually had two fires to deal with, he said. I had the rescue truck work on the vehicle, and then a brush truck started working on the brush fire that was next to the road there. That was our biggest concern, and also to make sure everybody was safe and well away from there, because a burning vehicle can still blow up. Contreras stressed that he and his family have no desire to file charges over the accident. They are merely hoping that the expense of transporting his father's body from Alpine back to Mexico can be covered. We don't want to file charges against the other person because we know it was an accident, he said. We don't hate him or want revenge against him because he caused death. Michki said, U.S. Highway 67 is a, quote, tough highway to travel, noting it can be dangerous due to the high volume of traffic and the speed at which cars often travel on it. There's a lot of places that you just need to slow down, and I will tell you for a fact that I think the speed limit is 70, but people go 80 or 85, and they will pass in no passing zones, said Michki. With an eye towards safety improvements, the Texas Department of Transportation recently added additional passing lanes to the route after conducting a years-long study of the corridor. Per a department spokesperson, passing lanes were added between mileposts 966 and 968 near Cibolo Creek Ranch Airstrip as a result of the study. As Title 42 ends, a coalition of local religious groups prepares to help migrants in need. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. On May 23rd, the Biden administration plans to end Title 42, a Trump-era policy that allowed Customs and Border Protection to immediately expel undocumented migrants from the United States, including those seeking asylum. With a potential influx of asylum seekers just a few weeks away, a coalition of religious organizations in the Big Bend has banded together, ready to offer aid to folks in immigration limbo. This coalition has been meeting in an official capacity for a few weeks, but has its roots in a roadside encounter. Reverend Michael Wallins, priest in charge of the Big Bend Episcopal Churches and co-chair of the Rio Grande Border Ministries, had, shortly after relocating to the Big Bend from Dallas 5 years ago. Early one morning, Wallins was driving between Alpine and Marfa when he stopped to pick up a Border Patrol agent stranded by the side of the road. We just started talking. I'd never met someone with the Border Patrol. I started asking him, what's that like, having to do things related to your job that might not feel good in the heart? Wallins remembered. The agent started crying, and we had a long talk. And then after that, I asked him, what do you want people to know about you? And he said, I want people to know that I'm more than the uniform. After that encounter, Wallins made a point to reach out to local Border Patrol agents and the sector chief, offering humanitarian assistance to the migrants and a listening ear to the agents. He earned an unofficial post as someone who could be counted on to help house and transport asylum seekers in limbo. Wallins mostly serves people who have passed their credible fear interviews, a critical part of the asylum process that allows migrants to legally stay in the country and are awaiting the opportunity to be reconnected with loved ones already in the U.S. As an example, there was a 19-year-old father, a 17-year-old mother, and a 6-month-old baby, and they needed to get to Detroit. They passed all their interviews, but Border Patrol would have had to separate them because the father was an adult and the mother wasn't. They didn't want to do that, so they called me. Wallens helped feed and house the young family while they waited for transport. Now that he's enlisted the help of dozens of other churches and lay people, representatives from the Episcopal, Methodist, Catholic, and Presbyterian churches in Marfa and Alpine, members of the Young Life organization, among many others, he's hoping to be able to extend a hand to more migrants in need. Our goal and role is to get them on their way to their final destination. What we do is welcome them and figure out what their transportation needs are. In many cases, they already have tickets, so they just need a ride to the airport or the bus station, he explained. I think the most anybody would spend the night would be for 2 nights, but it's all tied into transportation available. Mimi Smith, who helms the Big Bend Gazette and is a member of St. James Episcopal Church in Alpine, has been attending coalition meetings as a volunteer. The coalition has some of the best organization of logistics I've ever seen, she said. I signed up for transport, mostly because I think it suits me. I've driven these routes for 27 years, driving to jails and prisons and courthouses. I hope to make the trips relaxing for my guests, rather than prolonging the trauma of their long journeys. Smith still keeps in touch with some of the migrants she's transported, including 2 women who escaped the evacuation of Kabul in August 2021 and tried their luck with the asylum process at the U.S.-Mexico border. It's a frightening passage from their countries of origin into this country, into this Big Bend region of Texas, she said. But each project has a beginning, middle, and a happy ending, getting people to their sponsors, families, destinations. Like Wallen's early morning encounter by the side of the road, Smith was touched by the revelation that there were local Border Patrol agents looking to extend a hand to people in transition. When a big old federal agency, a boots-on-the-ground agency, tackles a humanitarian project and invites us civilian locals to be part of the solution, I'm jumping on board. Everyone who is touched by this will benefit. As a man of faith, Wallens believes that serving refugees and Border Patrol agents is deeply entwined with the religious ideas he preaches to the 5 congregations he serves in the region. There's a biblical mandate to welcome the stranger and care for those who are orphans and widows and people in need. If you look at the fact that Jesus was also a refugee, we're called to treat everyone with dignity and respect. Big Bend Sector Border Patrol did not respond to a request for comment. As Presidio considers HOT tax ordinance, Trouble Interlingua highlights need for more robust collection. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. At the last regular meeting of the Presidio Visitors and Convention Bureau in April, Board Director Ariane Velasquez-Ornelas informed the board that she intended to present an agenda item at the upcoming Presidio City Council meeting that would pave the way for a local hotel occupancy tax, HOT, to be collected from short-term rentals within the city limits. Discussion was tabled at that meeting, but the item's place on the agenda marks a major shift for the tourism industry of the remote border city. Unlike many neighboring Big Bend communities, Presidio doesn't yet have local regulations or tax collection mechanisms in place for short-term rentals listed on sites like Airbnb and VRBO. They're popping up like bluebonnets, Velasquez Ornelas said, speculating that some local families set them up to help make ends meet during the pandemic. Hot tax collection is a sore subject for Presidio city officials, despite the relatively small number of short-term rentals in town. Unlike Marfa, which has 168 active rentals, Presidio only has 25. Where Marfa has 5 hotels, Presidio only has 2. The status of Presidio's non-operational third hotel, the Big Bend Inn, has been questionable since it was revealed that the business owed $100,000 in overdue hot taxes. The hotel's owner could not be reached for comment. I actually looked into it a few years back and even reported the case to the state, but nothing to my knowledge ever came of it, Mayor John Ferguson said. I can't remember the last time that they were doing their due diligence to pay those taxes. Velasquez Ornelas explained that hot funds in Presidio fund activities through the Visitors and Convention Bureau. Despite its name, the board also organizes holiday events the community can enjoy, like last year's successful Christmas Posada and a 4th of July celebration at the Presidio International Speedway. Hot funds basically determine our budget, she explained. The state collects its own hot funds, the majority of which go to the General Revenue Fund, and a smaller portion of which go to statewide tourism initiatives, per the Comptroller's website. Usage of local hot funds can vary depending on the size and location of the local entity involved. Coastal communities, for example, can use hot funds to maintain beaches. In general, local hot funds must be somehow linked to improving the area's tourism. In 2021, the Big Bend's state representative, Eddie Morales, introduced a bill that would expand the definition of what hot taxes could be used for, arguing that the funds should be able to be used in dark sky protections that enhance area tourism. The bill died in the chamber, but highlighted a desire to reconfigure hot tax programs to better suit diverse tourist economies. The tax code is very prescriptive. There's only a certain number of things that these taxes can go toward, explained Marfa City Attorney Teresa Todd. It can't go into the general fund, street paving, or the police department, or anything like that. They have to be used for the promotion of tourism. Todd has helped steer Marfa through its fair share of hot tax collection issues. In 2019, a city budget workshop revealed that the Hotel St. George owed the city more than $100,000 in local hot funds, prompting the city to reevaluate how they were dealing with tax collection. Todd started summoning some of the smaller players into municipal court. Many newer short-term rental operators weren't even aware that they owed tax. These weren't really folks who get notices to come to court that much, she explained. It really traumatized them. People would come to City Hall crying with their checkbooks. All we were really looking for was compliance. Just before the pandemic, the city opted to contract with House Compliance, hoping that hiring an outside agency for collections would help. Widespread shutdowns in the spring of 2020 caused problems within the company, and the city ultimately decided the contract money wasn't worth the hassle. We just didn't feel we were getting the bang for our buck, Todd said. The city of Marfa returned to DIY collection. State tax law allows for a city or county to charge interest on overdue hot tax and outlines provisions through which the municipality's legal fees are covered by the tax pool should the collection process require legal muscle. Since the pandemic, Todd hasn't noticed as many compliance issues, and the city has opted for a lighter touch. In the case of smaller operators, who may not have been aware that local as well as state tax was due, the city often opted to waive late fees, focusing on empowering short-term rental owners to get into and stay in compliance. I don't even know that we ever really find anybody. There have been a few people with pretty egregious cases that maybe paid interest, but that's very, very rare, she explained. Some of the issues lie in the fact that local hot taxes in the Big Bend are self-reported and remitted. In neighboring Brewster County, a flat 7% hot tax is charged for all short-term rentals outside of Alpine. Short-term rental operators are sent a spreadsheet with tax bills for all other short-term rentals in the area and a worksheet to help them verify the amount owed. This sheet of tax data is publicly accessible, but the fact that it is also automatically sent out to all short-term property owners in the area has stoked controversy in Brewster County Commissioner's Court, as rental owners are made acutely aware each tax season who's been keeping up with their bills. It's been an ongoing issue since before I came into office, said South County Commissioner Sarah Allen Colando, who was sworn in January 2019. It started out as people not realizing they had to pay hot taxes to Brewster County, and it's kind of devolved into, well, if Joe's not going to pay, then I'm not going to pay either. There are some pretty significant rental operations out here who know they're supposed to pay and are just not paying. It's created a lot of friction. Non-payment of county hot taxes has been the subject of public comment at the past three Brewster County Commissioners Court meetings. During their April 26th meeting, Darrell Eby of Big Bend Vacation Rentals asked county officials how they plan to address the discrepancy. It seems like the county should be obligated to enforce that tax interlingua, he said. If one of our largest competitors is not obligated to pay, that is a significant disadvantage to other lodging operators in the county that are paying. Eby did not name the entity in question. Base Camp Terlingua, a popular rental spot on Kempf Road, widely known amongst the influencer set for its distinctive bubble house lodging. According to records obtained through the Brewster County Treasurer's Office, Base Camp Terlingua has not paid hot taxes to Brewster County since March 2020. Base Camp doesn't appear on the Brewster County hot rolls until 2019. In 2019 and 2020, Base Camp paid a total of $28,488 in Brewster County hot tax. Today, the only money it has ever paid the county, according to public records, despite being one of the most popular and successful short-term rentals in the area. Base Camp is not the only rental property in Brewster County delinquent on hot taxes, but it is the largest such company to do so and has delayed payment the longest. According to the worksheet sent to rental owners by the Brewster County Treasurer's Office, the county levies a 10% per annum interest on late taxes. Base Camp's current rental holdings should generate around $300 a night for the county at full occupancy. Most other rental properties automatically deduct taxes from their bookings through platforms like Airbnb and VRBO. According to an Airbnb spokesperson, the company has an agreement with the state of Texas allowing the site to automatically collect and remit the 6% state hot tax each time a guest books. In some areas, hosts can opt into a system that automatically collects local hot taxes as well, streamlining the process. In Texas, Airbnb collected and remitted over $64 million in occupancy taxes in 2019, an increase of approximately 95% over 2019, they said. Basecamp was barred from Airbnb in 2020 amidst sexual assault allegations against founder and owner Jeff Leach. Basecamp rentals are currently managed through the company's website, which automatically adds 13% tax to each transaction, 6% of the total to the state, and 7% of the total to the county. Where that money ends up is unclear. We have contributed hundreds and thousands of dollars to hot tax over the years from various entities we manage, Leach wrote in response to a request for comment. We are in contact with Visit Big Bend and look forward to chatting with them about concerns and questions. A representative for Visit Big Bend, the entity responsible for instituting and disbursing Brewster County's hot funds, did not return requests for comment. Commissioner Colando stressed the need for better education and updated regulations to help the county collect. People don't understand how hot taxes can and cannot be used and are frustrated that it's not being used for worthwhile projects that are simply illegal uses of the funds. Then, on top of that, there's this huge amount of money that is not being collected or remitted to the county like it's legally supposed to. There's a lot of people who are understandably upset with how the hot tax is collected, enforced, and expended. Justin Bragiel, general counsel for the Texas Hotel and Lodging Association, had been briefed on the situation in Terlingua. This isn't a Brewster County-only problem. This is a problem everywhere. I get lots of calls about short-term rentals because there's so many of them, and they're hard to locate. The law is very much on the county's side, he explained. The problem is always the amount of resources that the county devotes to going after each individual operator who may not be complying with the law. The county attorney, for example, can go to the district court and ask the court to enjoin that lodging property from operating until they become current on their taxes. The county has the ability to do full audits of any individual who's supposed to be remitting taxes. And then there are paneled penalties that apply for failure to comply. The legal tools are there, it's just a matter of devoting the resources. As Presidio begins regulating a burgeoning short-term rental industry, Marfa and Terlingua can provide a blueprint for local officials to plan how to grow the local tourism economy responsibly and fairly. Mayor John Ferguson, for one, is looking forward to the changes. I'm going to open an Airbnb myself, probably within the next year, he said. I'm happy to pay. I think it's the right thing to do. Hopefully, it'll make a positive difference in Presidio. City Council meets regarding water infrastructure plans and local farm stand as two council members leave office. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. City Council met for a regular meeting on Tuesday evening, the very last for council members with expired terms exiting office, Buck Johnston and Yosef Ben-Yehuda, to discuss the city's water infrastructure goals, location for the Marfa Farm Stand, and more. All council members were present at Tuesday night's meeting, and a few sported purple polos with white City of Marfa logos for the occasion. After a swift approval of a new proposed logo for the Marfa Library, City Manager Mandy Roan brought up Marfa Activity Center pool operations, including price breakdown for admission and age limits. "We know the pool is not like a huge moneymaker. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to make it really affordable," said Roan. The pool, which has been closed to the public since May 2020, is set to open for the summer season on May 31st and stay open until August 6th. Roan laid out the proposed price breakdown for admission: $3 for adults, $1 for kids and seniors, $50 for adult passes for the summer, $25 for kids and seniors passes for the summer, and $75 for 5-member family passes for the summer, to which council members were amenable. Pending adequate staffing, the facility will be open to the public 5 days a week, from Tuesday through Saturday, and will be available to rent for private parties on Sundays. Sunday rentals will run $150. The city is not yet taking reservations for private pool parties. The city is working on hiring lifeguards and a pool supervisor. Applications can be found on the city's website. Council member Johnston insisted lap swim and aerobics time slots don't overlap on the daily schedule, and Roan proposed a tentative daily schedule of lap swim from 10 to 11 a.m., water aerobics from 11 a.m. to noon, closed for lunch from noon to 1 p.m., and open swim for the remainder of open hours from 1 to 6 p.m. Later, in her city manager's report, Roan said the pool bathrooms are currently being cleaned up and toilets and sinks were being repaired by the Public Works Department. Council voted to keep the age limit for unaccompanied children at age 8 or older, with council members Johnston and Eddie Payares voting nay. Next up was an agenda item to approve a request for proposals, RFP, for a water and wastewater rate study, which the city budgeted $20,000 for in the last budget cycle. Roan said rates hadn't changed since 2015, and the study would provide them with a 5-year plan, which would be helpful to have in hand when going through the next budget cycle. "It's definitely time for us to update it, and I think having this study will make it a little bit easier. We can justify the changes that are being made, and we can understand a little bit better what we should be charging," said Roan. Council voted unanimously to approve the RFP for the water and wastewater rate study. Trey Gerfers, Parks and Recreation Board President, as well as Board Chairman for the Presidio County Water Conservation District, then joined council members to discuss a variety of updates on federal and state funds available for the city's and county's future water infrastructure projects. Gerfers said with a recent influx of money from the federal government from the bipartisan infrastructure law, which allocated $50 billion in funds to the Environmental Protection Agency for water and wastewater infrastructure funding, the city was well poised to receive money for their laundry list of projects. "That money will be administered by the state revolving funds run by the Texas Water Development Board," said Gerfers. "And because Presidio County is traditionally underserved, it may receive more backing from the federal and state government for the next 5-year funding cycle. They are really desperate at the national level to have to make quick points, and they want to be able to point to a community that's working together, county, all entities. They love that we're rural, remote, underserved, the whole thing. And so just all these stars are aligning. Fort D.A. Russell and East Heights neighborhood were among the projects on the city's water infrastructure wish list to be funded with the received funds. Gerfer said state revolving funds that are administered are often forgivable loans from 75% or more. He has been working with a variety of groups on an ongoing basis, including the Environmental Defense Fund, Water Finance Exchange, as well as other grant writers and consultants, and has submitted funding requests to the Economically Distressed Areas Program, EDAP. If you don't get funded through the state revolving funds, maybe we'll get funded through EDAP. We've just got a lot of balls in the air, said Gerfers. Next steps were to set up a local steering committee, headed by Gerfers and consisting of 6 to 8 other representatives from around the county. The steering committee will work together to achieve accountability and transparency, said Gerfers, and would set priorities for water infrastructure projects, work through issues, and budget before money is granted. Their proposals are currently being reviewed by the TWDB. They will likely be invited back in August to further discuss the funding and process and could receive funds as early as November, said Gerfers. He said he would continue to check in with the council in the coming months. He wrapped up his presentation by suggesting to council that the forthcoming water infrastructure projects and hopeful funding influx could also act as an opportunity to plan for the direction of the city's growth, which is sure to come, he said. If the city can guide the growth, you grow your tax base, you grow your rate base, and you avoid those sorts of headaches down the line where you've got all these wells drilled and all this septic failing. So it's something for you guys to think about, said Gerfers. Council moved on to the next agenda item regarding the Marfa Farm Stand location. There was confusion amongst council members and citizens present at the meeting for this specific agenda item as to whether or not council was supposed to be discussing the renewal of a previous agreement, which allows the farm stand to utilize the USO Pavilion for their Saturday morning markets, or whether council was deciding on the farm stand's new proposed move to the Marfa Public Library courtyard. Farm stand organizers, including Mainda Beeman and Bob Schwab, were present for the meeting, as were library representatives. Schwab wanted to be clear that the idea to move the farm stand to the library courtyard came from library staff, not the farm stand. He said library staff thought the event could provide good exposure for the library and there was an opportunity for joint programming. It was a library staff who said, "We see some opportunity for some great collaboration here. It's more visible. It might allow us to enhance some Saturday programming, and a lot of kids come to the market," said Schwab. Marfa Library's Board of Advisors, which Schwab also serves on, unanimously approved the concept, he said. After thinking about the move a great deal and assessing logistics like parking, but a current rule prohibiting commercial activity in the space, which can be waived by the current librarian for exceptions, led the farm stand to put the decision in front of the council, said Schwab. Given that particular rule, we thought it might be best to come before council to have that endorsed by the council or agreed to by the council, as opposed to letting just the library make the decision, said Schwab. But because the wording of the agenda item was about renewing the USO agreement, council was unable to act on a proposal to move the location to the library, but will include an item to discuss the farm stand's use of the library courtyard on their next agenda for a meeting in late May. In the meantime, Council authorized the continued use of the USO Pavilion for the farm stand while the library site agreement gets worked out. The primary issue with the USO space is the fact that it can be rented out on short notice, thus displacing the market. Meeting attendees were only aware of that issue occurring once before. Schwab said they were eager to provide the market to the community and were already behind schedule for this year. "We've already started about a month ago, typically, and so we delayed this. We were hoping this would be on a prior agenda. It's been delayed to this day. So the market is getting a very late start this year," said Schwab. After canvassing the local special election, in which the reauthorization of the quarter-cent sales tax for street improvement projects passed, Roan and Police Chief Steve Marquez gave their reports. Roan reported to City Council that city staff was working with EMS Director Bert Lagarde to host Stop the Bleed training, and Chief Marquez reported new police fleet vehicles would be in soon. He also said the police department is experiencing increased call volumes and is still seeking one more officer. Last were council member comments, where those exiting office bestowed their good luck wishes to continuing council members and said their goodbyes. Ben Yehuda said he joined the council to learn about the city's inner workings and will walk away with much more than that. He said he plans to stay involved with the volunteer fire department and the Presidio Council Appraisal District Board. "I really appreciated working with all of you, the city staff. It's totally bittersweet," said Ben Yehuda. Through teary eyes, Councilmember Johnston thanked city staff members, recalled challenges brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, and promised to stay in the loop, assisting with grants and more. "It's been really rewarding. I mean, it's been hard, and I've learned so much about the community and about myself," said Johnston. Councilmember Payares, making a fisherman reel in motion, said he'd continued to work with Ben Yehuda on the Marfa and Presidio County Museum and encouraged Johnston to stay on with the MAC pool project. Councilmember Raul Lara said Ben Yehuda and Johnston helped make up the best city council they've had in years, despite not always agreeing on everything. "But that's what the whole thing is about. Why do you want a council that's going to agree on everything?" said Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado, to which all agreed. "I want to thank Councilmember Johnston and Councilmember Ben Yehuda for serving the city of Marfa. I know it's a thankless position," said Mayor Benny Baiza. "We argue at times, but what I love is that we see the world through each other's differences and viewpoints. It's been an honor to work with both of y'all, and I wish you all luck." The meeting concluded with farewell handshakes and hugs all around.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 12th. Election turnout reaches 8-year high, by Nathan Hewer. Voter turnout at the polls for the May 7th constitutional amendment and local election reached an 8-year high in the county by a significant margin after votes were tallied on Election Day. A total 1,473 voters voted during this election, a number that is 531 higher than last year's 7-year record. This year's voter turnout puts the number of registered voters who voted at 18.18%. 5 local seats, 3 city council and 2 school board, were up for election and had contested races. Of those 5, four people retained their seats according to unofficial results provided at the end of Election Day. Darren Hodges received the most city council votes, 629, by a significant margin, and will return for another two-year term. James Warnock retained his seat as a city councilman with 399 votes, finishing third out of six candidates. R.J. Bernal will become a first-time councilman after receiving the second-highest vote tally with 463 votes. Bernal will take the seat previously held by Pam Pepper Palilio, who received the fifth-highest vote tally, 322, on city council. Freddie Martinez and Sandra Rivera retained their seats on the school board. Rivera won her race by 38 votes, and Martinez had one more vote than Felix Rodriguez, 54-53. Only one of the Fort Stockton ISB bond propositions passed during the election. Proposition D passed by 220 votes. The proposition was the lowest dollar amount of the five propositions, $3 million, and will be used for technology devices. Rejected pending ballots could change two election results. Two unofficial results from the May 7th election have the possibility of changing by the end of the week. Fort Stockton ISD bond Proposition A, which currently has 659 votes against and 656 votes for, could change due to 29 mail ballots that were not received by May 7th and 10 mail ballots that are pending because of a corrective action that is required. The winner of the Fort Stockton ISD School Board Ward 2 race could also change pending on additional ballots received by the end of the week. Freddie Martinez currently has a one-vote lead, 54-53, over Felix Rodriguez, and a nine-vote lead over Valerie Bueno. Pecos County Deputy Clerk Sophia Franco, who is the county's election clerk, revealed on May 10th that she had received two additional ballots that were pending because of a corrective action. For the mail ballots, Franco said the postmark date needed to be May 7th or sooner to be accepted. The ballots then go to ballot board on Friday, May 13th. The eight pending corrective action forms have until Friday, May 13th at 5 p.m. to come to the clerk's office and make good on that part of their ballot. The corrective action forms were sent to the voter if they did not complete their carrier envelope correctly. The action affords the voter more time to correct and make their vote count. Unofficial election results, City Council 3 at-large seats, Darren Hodges, 629, R.J. Bernal, 463, James Warnock, 399, Isai Rojas, 383, Pam Pepper Palilio, 322, Mike Stollard, 154, Fort Stockton ISD School Board Ward 2, Alfredo Freddy Martinez, 54, Felix D.J. Flax Rodriguez, 53, Valerie Bueno, 45, School Board Ward 5, Sandra Rivera, 111, Gloria C. Ortiz, 73, Fort Stockton ISD Bond, Proposition A, 4, 656, against 659, Proposition B, 4, 575, against 732. Proposition C, 4, 582, against 726. Proposition D, 4, 765, against 545. Proposition E, 4, 632, against 681. City of Fort Stockton Proposition 4, 726, against 246. Buena Vista ISD Bond, Proposition A, 468, against 31. Proposition B, 467, against 32. Severe thunderstorms triple yearly rainfall in city. The National Weather Service in Midland estimated that Fort Stockton received between 1 to 3 inches of rain on May 10th during a severe thunderstorm that lasted approximately an hour. The rainfall filled the Comanche Springs Canal Creek in Rooney Park, which had been dry for 2 months. Fort Stockton had previously been reported to have less than an inch of rain in 2022 before today. In addition, the NWS reported that wind gusts reached around 65 miles per hour and marble-sized hail was reported with the storm. No one was reported to be hurt during the storm in Fort Stockton, despite the significant damage that many structures received across town. City workers, county workers, and first responders provided immediate relief to businesses and citizens across town after the storm blew over. Sheriff's Office receives $1 million grant. The Pecos County Sheriff's Office was awarded $1,062,000 from Governor Abbott's Operation Lone Star Grant Program. Pecos County Sheriff T.J. Perkins and Deputy Jesse Dominguez presented the information regarding the grant at Monday's Commissioner's Court meeting. On May 31st, Governor Abbott issued a disaster declaration along Texas southern borders in response to the border crisis by providing more resources and strategies to combat the ongoing influx of unlawful immigrants. The Pecos County Sheriff's Office started to see more of an influx of illegal immigrants in Pecos County along with human smuggling. Previously, the Pecos County Commissioner's Court also issued a disaster declaration due to the border crisis to join with Governor Abbott's declaration, hoping to get assistance from the state. In September 2021, Governor Abbott announced he would provide grant funding for local governments through the Operation Lone Star Grant Program. The purpose of the grant program is to enhance interagency border security operations supporting Operation Lone Star, including the facilitation of directed actions to deter and interdict criminal activity. In order to accomplish the goal of trying to deter the human trafficking and narcotic smuggling, we need vehicles, night vision, and thermal imaging equipment, Perkins said. The state of Texas announced in March of 2022 that the Pecos County Sheriff's Office was awarded the grant money. The breakdown of the awarded money is as follows: $172,000 reimbursement for housing inmates being charged for human smuggling, $220,000 night vision and thermal imaging equipment, $670,000 10 patrol vehicles. Currently, the Pecos County Sheriff's Office is working with the United States Border Patrol on helping to slow down the flow of illegal immigrants under Operation Stone Garden Grant Program.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 5th. Former Wayne's Welding owner ordered to pay $1.3 million. On April 26th, a former Monahans businessman was ordered to pay $1.3 million in restitution for failure to pay withholding taxes. According to court documents, George Wayne Johnson, age 74, of Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, was the owner of Wayne's Welding Services, WWS, in Monahans. From 2015 to 2018, WWS withheld tax payments from its employees' paychecks, but failed to pay $1.3 million in required payroll tax to the Internal Revenue Service. Through his company, Johnson spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on his salary and personal expenses. In addition to the restitution ordered, Johnson was sentenced to 5 years of probation. Quote, employers have critical tax obligations with respect to their businesses, and the defendant in this case skirted them so that he could enrich himself, said U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff. We will continue to work closely with IRS criminal investigations to prosecute these matters. This is an appalling act not just because he stole more than $1 million from our nation, but because he expected his own employees to pay the price for his extravagant lifestyle, said Ramsey E. Covington, special agent in charge of IRS Criminal Investigations Houston Field Office. Quote, I am proud of our team at IRS CI for the investigative work in this case, and I am proud of the unwavering support of the U.S. Attorney's Office to prosecute those who choose to violate our tax laws, end quote. The IRS investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Lance Kennedy prosecuted the case. Cameras lead to arrest of copper thief. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Security cameras led a Monahans homeowner to catch a copper thief. Lieutenant Stormy Laws and Officer Richard Allen responded to 1206 South Franklin Street on April 16th in reference to a theft. Quote, Officer spoke to the homeowner, Roy Bell, who told officers copper was stolen from his home and he had captured the suspect on his home video surveillance, Monahans Police Captain Christopher Quintana said. After reviewing the video surveillance, officers were able to identify the suspect as Daryl Ray Carnegary, age 48, of San Angelo. Quote, Officers dealt with Carnegary earlier in the day, which is how they were able to identify him, Quintana added. A warrant was issued for Carnegary, and he was subsequently booked into the Ward County Jail on April 26 and charged with theft of material less than $20,000, a state jail felony. Carnegary's bond was set at $7,500. He was released after posting the bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 2 years or less than 180 days and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Meat market breaks ground. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Franco Brothers Meat Company is coming to Monahans. Joseph, Michael, and Trey Franco saw a need for a meat market and are in the process of fulfilling that need for the community. Quote, After our mom passed, we were sitting around the table one day talking about needing to do something, and Michael suggested we open a meat market, Franco said. The brothers discussed the pros, cons, and the community need for a place to buy good quality meat. Quote, Hopefully, by mid-June, what started as an idea at the kitchen table will become a reality, Franco said. The brothers plan to have beef, pork, poultry, seafood, seasonal hams, menudo, and other fully cooked seasonal meats. Special order burger setups will be available for customers. The burger setup are the burger patties, buns, lettuce, tomatoes, pickles, cheese, and condiments. Quote, Place an order for the number of burgers needed, pick up the order, take it home, cook the meat, and have a complete burger cookout, he said. Customers will be able to request special cuts of meat, such as specific thickness of steaks. Quote, I have been given the opportunity to intern on weekends at the Broken Heart Butchery in Andrews, Franco said. The Broken Heart Butchery is teaching Franco how to butcher completely free of charge. Along with learning to butcher, Franco is learning about all aspects of the meat processing business. The meat market will offer family packs of meat and fill orders for large events if orders are placed by Wednesday before the event, as well as supply Bennigan's in Monahans with cube steaks for the chicken-fried steaks on their menus. Quote, We will have a drive-through window for convenience and plan to offer delivery to Monahans and Thorntonville, Franco said.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.